You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Let's do this. Andy!
What up?
How's it going, my brother?
I'm doing well, my friend. How are you?
Everything great. So, yeah, man, long time. It's so great to see you again. Last time we met was at the On It Summit, right?
Influencer Summit, yeah. We had, that was a, there was a star-studded cast there, man. Between Lance Armstrong and NQ and all those other guys.
Crazy. I still talk to NQ. I did a podcast with Michelle Watterson 2 days ago.
And you did?
And we were talking about that weekend and it was like Brandon Gibson was there, John Deere, Aubrey. It was a crazy weekend. David Rutherford, remember him?
Have you talked to him lately?
Well, not lately. We are always in touch, like through Instagram and stuff like that. But he's a great guy.
He is, man. He just put up a post the other day. Because, you know, like, as long as we've known him, he's had that big beard.
Uh-huh.
And he put up a post the other day because that country music singer Charlie Daniels died.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, a lot of guys are huge on his music, especially if you're from the South. And so David put up a picture with him from a long time ago. He was all clean shaven with short hair.
Oh, I saw he looked so weird. Looked
must
like
have been like fresh in the Navy SEALs then, you know? He looked like a completely different person.
Yeah, yeah. No long hair, no anything. Over there, he was rocking like a couple of Johnny Cash t-shirts every day. He had like a Cash t-shirt. Hey, that was a great time, man. It was an awesome weekend.
Man. So you got to come back down to Austin at some point.
I know. I had to. I went to L.A. last year for Paulo Costa. He was fighting Romero. I went to see his fight. I met John Beer there. And I forgot who else. But I met a couple of guys that we met there at the summit, too. So I miss the energy there. Austin is awesome, right? Like, the energy there is so good.
It's great.
So how's everything on it?
Everything on it is good, man.
So you guys have a new CEO?
New CEO who you probably know, Jason Havey. You know, he's been kind of at the top for a long time now. So I think it was kind of more formality. You know, he's been, you know, doing the show for a while. And Aubrey's still up there. Aubrey's still very involved. But I think it must be a huge relief for Aubrey to kind of step away a little bit.
Yeah.
Somebody else take the reins a little bit more, but still be on the creative side of things and still be pushing the brand. You know, it's probably what you want. I've never invented a company, but I'm sure at some point you'd rather somebody else be running the day to day. You can kind of sit back and do what you're, you know, better at.
And especially for him, right? Because he was talking the last time we sat and talked, he was saying something like, "Hey, it's crazy that I go and I preach and I write about like quality of life and how you do this so your life gets better. And I'm pulling like 50, 60 hours in the office. It's kind of ridiculous. Yeah. So I gotta get someone to do that so I can, you know, just kind of like really do what I'm preaching, right? Because it's tough.
It wasn't meshy, but it is now. But yeah, I mean, we've changed a lot of stuff. Like, I mean, as you know, we're always coming out with new products and stuff. We just came out with our protein power puffs. It's like a high protein keto Cheeto. It's freaking delicious.
Oh, cool! You gotta hook me up with
that.
That's
a big hit. You know, we finally have our own hemp product. We were kind of behind on that one. Everybody's always asking when On It was gonna come out with your own CBD product. So we finally came out with our On It Total Hemp, which was a big hit. Good stuff. But I'd say the bigger change is like that I'm big on is what we've done with the gym. So, cool. For instance, that last area that we did that whole influencer summit at, that was the jiu-jitsu space at the time. Yes. That's a totally revamped sports performance area. It's all black turf and really cool equipment. Nice. Because we were having a lot of like NFL combine guys come by for a while to work out there. And so we moved the martial arts facility across the street and have even more space. So we've got
An area
for the Muay Thai, kickboxing ring, and then another area for the jiu-jitsu, matted walls, all that kind of stuff. So
that's awesome. Yeah, you guys have a 10th planet there, right? The 10th planet Austin is on it.
10th planet and on it. So, you know, that jiu-jitsu program is blowing up. We got guy Gabe Tuttle, who came out of Richie's gym in San Diego.
Okay.
And Kyle Bame, who's another 10th planet guy. Both of us as the coaches over there. And then myself, this girl, Chantel, she's from New York, and Cody Hofstadter, a Jackson Wink guy, are all kind of covering the striking side of things.
Oh, nice. That's awesome. Yeah.
So we're trying to build up this squad. We have all these young guys. You know, Austin's this big college town, so we have all these, like, 20-year-olds who just, I want to fight. You know, they're already asking about it. They've been training for a few months. They're already asking about getting a fight and stuff. We're like, dude, you got to do a jiu-jitsu tournament first. You got to do some wrestling classes. Like, everybody is so gung-ho and so anxious, but where they're learning. They're learning how to take, you know, smaller steps right now.
Yeah, last time we had a conversation, you say you had a couple more fights in you. Anything came out of there?
I finally booked one. This was May of last year.
Okay.
I had one booked, and I was about maybe 5 weeks away. And I was training with Lovato. He was getting ready for Musasi.
Oh, yeah.
And he had been beating my ass all week. And finally, I was wearing my wrestling shoes, and I tried to post out too hard while he was taking me down against the wall, and I just tore my knee up. I had to drop out of my fight, and I haven't really gotten back to the point where I felt healthy enough to take another one. I mean, I am now, but with all the COVID stuff, we'll see if another one ever happens. I'll probably end up competing a little bit in jiu-jitsu or just try to live vicariously through all my fighters.
That's right. I did a show with Lovato, and it was a crazy show. We end up doing a breakdown of his fight with Gegard Mousasi, and he got very emotional about it because everything he went through with that fight, that was crazy.
The whole brain thing. Yeah, he was on it. He was before the Mousasi fight, and he was kind of talking about it. And he broke down really big, and you know, I didn't think much of it because he was talking about his father. And then later on, you know, once all that.
Oh, he didn't say anything about the brain thing?
No, we didn't know anything about it. And then he told me later on, he was like, hey, man, I know I got really emotional, and y'all are probably wondering why. I was like, I didn't think anything of it, but I'm glad you're telling me now.
Well, shit, right? You got to say something like that. Say, look, I was going and crying everywhere. People figure like I was the biggest. That's the guy who's going to get for the Bellator championship, the crying guy all the time. Well, he said he was very, very emotional. He said he did not know if he was going to fight or not until a couple of weeks before the fight.
Yeah, man. But, I mean, and to continue training at the rate that he was training, when it's full of uncertainty,
he got hurt in Brazil too. Remember that he's saying that?
Oh,
he got hurt in Brazil. He tore something. Like a tendon or something, but they say he was bad. He couldn't walk. And he was like, I'm a month away. I cannot walk. I have this thing in my brain that I don't know what it is. And he just said he was like he was a fucking shitstorm.
It will kind of shows you just, I mean, how mentally strong he is. You know, a lot of guys have a hard time training for a fight, even if they know everything's going to happen.
Yeah.
They're just not disciplined, you know?
Yeah.
A guy like Lovato, he's not even sure if the big world title fight against one of the best ever is going to happen, but he still goes down to Brazil. He still gets all the hard training down there.
You actually got a good point. He was fucking fighting Mousasi. He's not just fighting he's fighting freaking Mousasi, right? It's crazy.
And I've been watching Mousasi, you know, when I was really getting into fighting when I was in college, and You know, he was beating people, and he was the Dream, I think, open weight champion or something. And I think he maybe triangled Dennis Kang, who was a great black belt. He up kicked KO Jacare. Like, that dude has been doing it.
Yes.
I mean, oh, and then he Kimura'd Mark Hunt or straight armbarred him or something.
That's freaking crazy, right? I'm pulling his record here. We'll just see. He probably got like 200 professional fights at this point. It's 55 fights, 46 wins, 7 losses. It's crazy. His last loss was to Rafael Lovato, and he was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 8 straight wins against.
And that's pretty wild, too, because that's 8 wins in the UFC. And then he just
walked
away.
At the names. He fought Thales Leites, Thiago Santos, which just fought Jones, right? That's Marreta.
Yeah.
Thales
Leites. How did he beat Thiago Santos?
Thiago Santos, KO, punches.
Jeez.
Vitor Belfort, KO, head kick and punches. Uriah Hall, punches. Chris Weidman, punches. Alexander Shlemenko, decision. Rafael Carvalho, TKO. Rory McDonald, TKO. And then he lost to it's crazy. It's
my
not
God.
Fighting like end of the roster guys. He's fighting like top competition, right? Then Rafael comes.
I'm excited about his next one against Lima.
Yes.
That'll be cool.
Lima is a beast.
I gotta think it's gonna be more of the same. I think obviously Lima, excellent fighter, but Masasi's a big dude.
Yeah.
And, you know, for fighting at 205, for doing open weight tournaments, I know Lima's not a small guy at 170, but I mean, it's hard to bet against Masasi.
Do you
want to
know what's crazy? He's 34.
Wow.
He's 34 years old. He's like, he's on his prime, right? Like the athlete prime, it's from what, 28 to like 35 or something like that.
I think something like that.
Something like that. See, if it's not on his prime, he was on his prime last year, which is just
right. He's not far away from his prime. Yeah,
exactly.
Like
that. Just like we were talking about Aldo, who just fought. Aldo is 33.
That is freaking crazy to me.
You can almost picture him like in black and white fighting, right? It's like, remember Aldo? Like, he fought like 10 years ago. He was already the champion. It's like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
Man, that's right.
Well, I mean, because I remember I first started watching him in the WEC, and he was beating up Uriah, beating up Cub Swanson, doing flying knees, doing counter knees, low kicks on everybody, just fucking everybody.
People talk like he's – There's two like theories for Aldo, right? One that he got after he lost to McGregor, he got so upset and sad that he never got a rematch like right away. That kind of when he gave up, he said, you know what, fuck it, I don't want to do this anymore. This is bullshit. And that's kind of like when his performance went down too. He lost the fire, I think. But now. Like if you think about like just this past weekend fight, he's fighting for the belt, so you gotta think he's motivated, right? And he's just getting like outclassed, not by a lot, but just like the guys are a little faster, punching a little better. He doesn't kick anymore. That kick followed by combos, he doesn't do any of that. So I gotta think he has some sort of an injury or something, because on the second round. He kicked a lot, and the guy felt it. Like, we could see it. He could see it, too. And then he stopped kicking. And we were like, dude, you just had it. Like, that was the way. Keep doing it. I know it's not that simple, either. I mean, you've been there. Right. I didn't. I had Marlon Moraes on the show, and he fought Aldo, and he won. And he was like, I think it's funny when people say Aldo doesn't kick anymore. I said, dude, it's not that simple. Just go and kick. So there's a lot of factors involving, but if you really think you know what you're talking about, they make the weight and go there and kick.
So, nobody's questioning about the guy checking the kick or the guy launching a huge right hand after the kick.
Yeah,
he was like, "Oh, throw the kick, it'll be fine."
Exactly. They say like when someone checks the kicks, it hurts a lot.
Oh, you're breaking your leg. I mean. Look at this guy.
That's right. That's the perfect example, right?
I mean, it's the same kind of thing with a lot of these fighters. And you know, Cerrone might be a little different story, but everybody's talking about Cowboy's so washed up. He hasn't won a fight in four fights. I'm like, true. He hasn't won a fight in four fights. But look at everybody. You got Justin Gaethje, Tony Ferguson, Conor McGregor, and Anthony Pettis.
Look at his fucking like, competition, right?
And yeah, I could give him that Anthony Pettis fight. You're going to lose some of those.
That Anthony Pettis fight, I could give it to Cowboy. I think it was a too close of a fight.
Yeah, I mean, that Pettis fight was his best performance out of all of those.
Yeah, yeah. I think the thing with Conor, he was just I don't even think he was – people say, like, when he's on the spotlight, he always – he never performed. I don't think it was that. I just think he got fucking caught up on a fucking – like an earthquake, right? Because he kind of described it that way. He said,
yeah.
So I go, this fucking guy kicks me in the face and punches me, and I take a breath. Now he's on me, like, hitting me with the freaking shoulder. It's like, oh.
Right, man. And you look at – some of his losses, you know, when guys really come out of the gates and go get him, like when he fought Robbie Lawler just went after him, and Robbie Lawler didn't finish him. But I mean, like, when somebody starts out a fight and just goes 100, you know, miles an hour at you, your reaction is not to fight it against 100 miles an hour. You kind of want to, like, calm the ship and be cool.
Yeah.
And you know, I think he tried to do that, but Conor just didn't let up and then ended up that big kick.
Yeah, and Cowboy, it's a notorious, like, a slow starter too, right? Like,
right.
He takes his time. He was never like a rush type of guy. So he always
was
very composed and I think. And then what was that guy, the ESPN guy that
said, Stephen A. Smith.
Oh, what a freaking dark. I was like, oh my god, I can't believe they let
this
guy talk.
Okay, that's another guy. That's another guy where I was talking about these analysts that kind of, they say one thing just to be super polarizing, and so either people will agree with them or people don't agree with them, but either way they're talking about him.
Yeah, that's his thing, right? They said, like, he talks a lot of shit about NBA too, right? Like, his
his
thing is to be polemic shit, kind of,
and it's always going to get reactions out of people.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's like, Joe Rogan, I remember Joe Rogan was so mad at him. Like,
Rogan took some offense at that.
How can you say that about freaking Cowboy Cerrone? It's like, you have no idea what you're talking about or about who you're talking about, right? Because it's freaking Cowboy Cerrone, man.
Exactly, man. And then, what, you know, to add insult to injury, he came out like a few days later doing a little boxing pad session. And it was the worst shit I've ever seen.
Yeah, like, what, pink gloves or pink pads or something like that, too?
He didn't know what he was doing. His pad guy didn't know what he was doing. I didn't know what the hell I was watching.
That was ridiculous. That was crazy. That was crazy.
Yeah.
Look, who do you have right now at Onnit? You guys have, like, a bunch of professional athletes, some UFC guys.
Yeah, so out of the fighters, you know, we've got Michelle, Cowboy. Michelle and Cowboy have been with us for a long time.
Yeah.
And now we also got Dustin Poirier, who we were kind of talking about a little earlier. And, I mean, you know, he is every single one. You know, look at – if you were to look at his record as well, you know, except for the
Dusty?
Few losses here and there between – let's see, who was it?
Pulling up right now.
Yeah.
That is crazy.
Michael Johnson. Michael Johnson got him. Khabib got him.
Yeah.
He had that no contest against Eddie Alvarez.
Yeah.
But other than that, man, he wins dominant fights, and the fights are super exciting. Like the Gaethje fight, the second Alvarez fight, the Max Holloway fight, this most recent one. I mean, they are fight of the night candidates.
It's crazy.
Or fight of the year candidates. I'm sorry.
Yeah. That last fight with Dan Hooker, did you see that fight? Oh, my God, man. That guy, it's on fire.
Him and Dan Hooker, yeah, that was it. That was great.
What do you think about this Khabib thing? Like, you think anyone is going to beat that guy?
I mean, I think Gaethje has the goods to do it.
We also said that about Tony. Remember, like, everybody was like, well, Tony is the Tony, most dangerous fight for Khabib. People were betting, like, on a doctor stoppage because they had this whole theory. It was like, Khabib is going to take him down. he's really good with the elbows, and he's going to elbow Khabib, he's going to cut Khabib, and he's going to win the fight by doctor stoppage. I was like, dude, look at that.
I think that's a little far-fetched. If you look at the fights where it's been like a dominant wrestler get on top of somebody, like, so there's the old one, Kevin Randleman against Boss Rutten, right?
Uh-huh.
Where Boss won a 5-rounder off of his back by, you know, being more active.
Yeah.
And then there was, we were just talking about Musasi versus King Mo. And King Mo won that fight, but if you looked at their faces afterward, King Mo was all sort of fucked up, and Musasi was good.
Yeah.
I think, though, that out of Randleman, out of King Mo, and out of Khabib, I think Khabib is the best of the ground and pound. Those other guys might have been more, like, accomplished wrestlers, but I don't think they were as good a ground and pound artist.
Yeah.
And so I think Khabib would have taken Tony, because I don't think Tony can stop that takedown. You know, Tony, he won a decision against Danny Castillo, even though he spent most of the time on his back.
Uh-huh.
And I think Khabib was going to wrestle even better than Danny. But Gaethje, I think both has, you know, hits hard enough to put anybody out, but also he's a super accomplished wrestler. And if you talk That's to him, true. One of his best assets is scrambling.
Yes.
So I would think that also, you know, I think he's got some superb coaching with Trevor Whitman. Yeah. I think that guy's such a wizard of MMA. So I could pick Gaethje to beat Khabib.
Usman went there, right, to finish. Gaethje. Kamaru Usman just went there to finish his camp with against now Masvidal. But he escaped Florida because he was training with Gilbert.
Right,
and he didn't want to stay there, I guess, like with his teammate and fighting for the title.
I remember because, you know, because Henry Hooft has a whole stable now.
Yeah.
Henry Hoof guys are beating everybody up, right?
It's crazy, right? And see the new gym too. They have like a medical group or something that sponsors them.
Oh
now.
Yes,
Stanford
Medical or something
like that. They did like a state of the art facility for those guys. And everybody's
and if you think
there.
About like other companies that occasionally sponsor gyms, it's usually like. Well, I don't know what kind of companies it usually is, but it's usually not a medical company.
Yeah,
I feel like a medical company has deeper pockets than almost any other company out there, you know?
Yeah.
And not only that, but now this medical company has some of the best athletes in the world all under one roof. They can just study them, everything. I'm sure everything's like Ivan Drago style, you know?
Yes.
They're getting everything.
That's
but,
true.
But, you know, Henry Hoof was coaching both of those guys, both Usman and Burns, so... Yeah. So Henry Hooft removed himself from the coaching position. So both those guys, I guess Burns had enough guys down there to train with him.
Yeah.
But I guess, you know, Usman wanted to go get into a different environment.
It's funny because I did a show with Gilbert and I asked him, I said, dude, I actually created a friction between him and David Ramos without wanting to do. Because I asked him about Usman. Say, is he going to say, look, he's a week away from the Tyron Woodley fight when we recorded that. So I'm talking to the guys. Like, look, I'm not a journalist, so I'm choosing you, dude. So it's not. Let's assume already you're gonna beat Tyron Woodley, and you're next for the title. Okay? He's like, oh, okay. They're not used to that either. So look, I'm a fan. I don't care. So I was like, all right. So you're beating Tyron Woodley. Your next fight is definitely Usman. How are you guys gonna handle that? You think it's gonna put like a It's going to create a little friction on friendship. And I thought he was going to say, oh, no. He was like, yeah, I think so. I was like, oh, okay. And then...
Brutally honest.
And then he said something about David Ramos as an example, and David got super pissed. He was like, oh, you shouldn't talk. Because he was like, oh, David, there was this friend of mine, you know, I helped him. I used to beat him on the training a lot. And then there was the... David was like, you don't talk about training. That was not true and this and that. He created this whole other problem. But as far as the Usman subject went, he was like, hey, I think it's going to be weird. Yeah, it's going to be weird. Say, well, it's not like he's not expecting because he knows at some point we're going to have to fight. But I do think it's going to be weird. And that just clicked me because I was like, how quick those guys get to, it's not selfish is the wrong word, but it's like he's able to separate the individual from the friendship and from everything. It's like, this is my time. And if I have to get through you, I'm going to have to do it. And And I'm not going to let our friendship ruin that because I'm going to fucking beat you. That's kind of the mentality. And I was like, dude, that's freaking scary because he's like, we're not that close. I was like, yes, you are. You were just helping each other and like you guys train together every day. He's like, yeah, but it's like, you know, it's different. So you just told me like 5 minutes ago he was training with you on your garage.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, well, you know, but he knows it's coming. That's kind of what I mean. I say, all right. And you said like, as soon as they booked that fight, Usman flew away like a week later.
I mean, you've got to. How could it not be weird? How can it not be awkward? But, you know, to that point is like sometimes guys, you know, they're close in the gym. They train together all the time. But it doesn't necessarily mean that they're homies outside the gym.
That's true.
That's true. Sometimes like even, you know, some guys I see them constantly in the gym, all the time. But we never hang out socially, ever. It's weird.
Yeah, and that's the social encounters is at the gym, right? The gym kind of fulfilled that, right? It's like, hey, buddy, what's up? And you hug and say, yeah, all right. Like, yeah,
right.
See you Wednesday. It's like, okay.
Yeah, dude. You leave and you go to your separate lives and you don't talk again until it's time to train again.
That's crazy, yeah.
I mean, I've never had to encounter that, but, I mean, that was kind of the classic John Jones and Rashad Evans, right?
Yeah.
And that was when John Jones left to Black Zillions at the time.
Oh, I don't remember that.
Yeah, because
Jones left?
Oh, I'm sorry. My bad.
Rashad left. Yes. I was like, shit, Jones? I said, I don't remember that.
No, Rashad left. And I guess, it's one of those situations, kind of like when Mike Perry and Cowboy fought. Mike Perry had just gotten to Albuquerque. And then they announced that fight, and that's when Cowboy completely left Jackson's, and now he's doing everything at the ranch.
Yeah.
Can't have two guys that are going to fight in the same room. It's too weird.
It is,
and you can't have coaches with that conflict. That's so what I appreciate Hooft taking himself out of the equation instead of picking a side.
Yeah, but that's still like the I think the best place that manages that, it's American Top Team, right? They have a lot of guys, and I had a lot of guys from American Top Team lately. I had Conan, I had the physical guy, Everton, and I had Pahumpinha.
Oh, the little jiu-jitsu guy?
The jiu-jitsu coach, yeah.
So when you have the interviews with those guys, do y'all go Portuguese the whole time?
Portuguese the whole time.
Yeah,
Portuguese, cool. The whole thing. So our audience is like 99% Brazilians.
Right. I went to ATT way back in the day before my pro debut. So this was maybe into 2009 or early 2010 because I did four amateur fights and I wanted to go to like a real camp before my pro debut. And I remember, my hookup was Eve Edwards because Eve was an American Top Team guy. And I went there and I had great training, but not great vibes.
Really? You know?
I was kind of like, maybe I was a little shy, just, a little too nervous or whatever. But, there's a language barrier. There's a lot of guys that have been there forever. You're kind of like the new guy. So I still remember, sparring really hard with Yuri Villafort.
Okay.
It was me and Yuri Villafort in the cage going after it. And there was, like, five guys, like Thiago Alves, Danilo Villafort, a bunch of guys on the outside of the cage, only coaching him in Portuguese, and I've got nobody helping me.
Holy shit! It's like you gotta be the gringo, all right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's not true.
I did a couple stints there, and then I took off. But I remember really liking being coached by Conan.
Yeah,
I remember Conan's coaching was excellent. Cattell, I don't know how to say Cattell's last name. Cubis.
I don't know.
The kickboxing coach, he was excellent as well. Yeah.
And then we were talking about like how they have different like whole teams from Conan is the head coach, but they have like I don't know like a second tier head coach, and they have like four entire teams prepared for that. Like
because
they have like I don't know like 200 professional fighters. It's crazy. So
most of whom are fighting the UFC.
Yes. So they have like, I don't know, like 20 guys that fight on the same division. So those guys are fighting each other a lot. So they are well prepared for that. Like they see, they were telling me, like, those guys don't even see each other because we schedule one in the morning, and he has his whole thing for him. We got like great sparring and the medical and everything, and it's not the same team that's coaching the other guy. So
right.
They kind of figure out a way to make that work because it happens, right? It happens a lot.
No, it definitely does. And at a place like that, it seems like one of the only places that can actually pull that off. When you have that many different high-level coaches, you've got that much space. So, scheduling the guys, hey, you got the AM practices this week. He's got the PM practices.
Yes.
He's with this group of coaches and sparring partners. You're with this group of coaches and sparring partners. I can see how it works out there, but at a smaller gym, just not happening. Especially like at Sanford, where they're both working with the same striking coach.
Exactly. The one guy is the star, which is kind of what happens at Jackson's too, right? Like you have you have Jackson, Greg Jackson, and you have like Brandon Gibson. There's only one Brandon Gibson there, so he's gonna have to coach a couple of guys, and it's kind of. But you know Thiago Moises, because you guys sponsor him too. You remember Thiago? Thiago Moises.
Who? Thiago Alves?
Moises.
Moises. Oh, Moises. Yeah.
So he did the podcast with On It. It's like, I know that. It's On It.
Oh,
like,
nice, man.
So he was kind of saying that too. It's like when he walked into AT&T. I keep saying AT&T, but that's the phone call. But it's like ATT. When he walked in there, he said he was super intimidated too. He's like,
oh, sure.
He's Brazilian, so there's no language barrier. But he was like, shit, you look around, there's like Justin Poirier walking by this side. And then you have like, I don't know, like Thiago Alves on that side.
Yeah. And I mean, Marlon, they're all there.
Pedro,
right?
It's crazy. They say it's very intimidating.
Yeah, I still remember one of my sparring rounds was with Thiago Silva. And this was like at the time where Thiago Silva was just beating up everybody.
Yeah.
And it was no different with me. He beat me up too.
Very gentle, right?
Dude, Thiago Moises, though, or how do you, Moses or Moises?
Moises. Yeah.
Moises, yeah.
We say Moises.
That's what I thought. I first got wind of him when he was fighting an RFA and he pulled off a helicopter armbar.
Yes. Crazy.
Nobody does that.
Yeah. And I asked him to say, so he was like, oh, yeah, I did that helicopter. I was like, what is that? And he goes like, you know when you're training with kids that you kind of like flip them in the air? I said, that was that, but he wasn't a kid. He was like a full-grown man. I was like, holy shit.
Yeah, exactly. It's like when you're training with somebody who weighs like 50 pounds less. you can grab their sleeves and the gi, not just their gloves.
Yes.
It's insane.
That was crazy.
Dude, his last fight against Michael Johnson was awesome.
He was amazing. He was amazing. Yeah. His submission. You see his takedown? He's like, I do this thing where I do like a breakdown of the fight. So I was like, hey, Thiago, let's do the breakdown. So I put the fight on the screen. And he goes like, yeah, let's do the second round because that's when the submission. I said, oh, all right, let's do the. He was like 4 seconds on the second round. I was like, really, dude? So we're going to have to redo this and start from the first round.
He shot that double. And Michael Johnson's such a good wrestler that he defended it really well. So he picked up the single and still couldn't finish. So he just dropped in a leg lock.
Crazy.
Nobody does that either. The only guys that do that is like, well, Ryan Hall did the Imanari roll to BJ Penn.
Yes.
And that was slick. But to actually pick a leg up and then drop down on it, I think I've seen Thiago do that, and I've seen Gary Tonin do that in one.
He was crazy because he was literally running after him. And so he went for the double. Michael kind of escaped it. So he just got like one hook on one leg. It's like, I'm not letting this go.
It
was crazy. He said that he called it the bocinha when he drops down and brings the leg under the way he did. So he catches the leg. And he said, I trained that a lot because his legs are so thin. So I knew I could get it. It was this whole.
Wow. So they had already been working on that. That's even cooler.
Yeah, he said, like, we worked on that a lot with Parrumpinha, Marcos.
Nice.
I don't remember his last name. It's Marcos.
Yeah.
His nickname, it's Parrumpinha.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Dude, speaking of Gary, he's in Abu Dhabi right now to coach Ryan Benoit.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
I didn't know that.
Right now, yeah, Ryan Benoit is actually a Texas guy. He's a Dallas guy, and I don't know how he got hooked up with Gary, but yeah, Gary's out there cornering him. Yeah,
I'm trying to take a look at the card. He's gonna fight tomorrow.
When's the card this week?
There's a fight tomorrow and there's a fight Saturday. There's two.
Oh my God, I didn't even
crazy,
know that.
Right? Tomorrow we have Kelvin Kattar versus Dan Ige.
We're
recording this on July 14th. This is probably gonna go to the air like in 2 weeks. So by the time we're recording this, the fight already happened.
I'm
just gonna say it because it's not gonna do anything. Because I saw Dan Ige rolling with the Khabib right here at Renzo's.
Yeah,
they did like I don't know, like 5-6 rounds, just no gi, just kind of like warming up. Khabib set him up like I don't know, like 15 times in 10 minutes, and he'll go for it. You see his head and he let go and resets. And it's freaking Dan Ige. It's crazy.
Wow,
he was crazy. I was like this.
I mean, I think Dan's last fight was in Houston and he fought that Mirsad Bektik. And
No, Dan just fought. Hold on. He just fought like not too long ago. Hold on. He just fought Edson Barboza in May 16 and he won.
Wow,
a shaky decision too.
No, yeah, so he beat Bektik, and it was really impressive.
Yes.
And I forgot about the Barbosa. Honestly, with that Barbosa one, I always root for Barbosa, man. I love watching that guy fight. I've been on a couple cards with him before.
Uh-huh.
I remember that fight being tight. I don't remember who I thought won, though.
Yeah, I think people are kind of saying Edson won. I really think he was super close. Like,
yeah,
look,
sure.
When it's close, you're just going to have to take a chance.
When it's close, it's almost like, okay, he loses. Let's just not pay him half, though.
Exactly, right?
It's kind of everybody get paid the whole amount, and just because you lose a razor-thin decision shouldn't mean you make half of your money.
You know, I have a friend of mine that's fighting tomorrow. He's Ricardo Ramos. He's fighting...
Who's he fighting?
Huh?
Who's he fighting?
Yeah, that's what I'm looking at. Hold on. He's fighting Lerone Murphy. So
I don't even know him.
Yeah, Ricardo Ramos.
Where does Ricardo train out of?
He trains at Urias Faber Alpha Male.
Really?
Not for this fight because he was in Brazil, so there was this whole pandemic thing going on. But he usually does his camps at Alpha Male.
Oh, okay, very nice.
And he's really good. And we were talking about decisions and everything. And I said, look, we have three judges, right? So what if we just have two judges and the referee, like Herb Dean, goes in there. He's in the fucking cage. He knows who won. And what if you have like those two judges? So one guy gives to Dan Ige, the other guy gives to Barboza. They call and say, Herb, what's your take? And he's like, hey, I think Dan Ige won because I was there. I could see it. And
I
that's
love that
the,
idea.
Right? It's and you want to hear something even crazier. I had Minotauro Nogueira, Big Nog, on the show. He's the UFC ambassador in Brazil. And he was criticizing heavily, too. And I said, look, what if you take those guys out of the arena, put them on a soundproof place in the back, watching on TV, where every break, like between rounds, they get to see like a highlight, or if they want to, they can rewind the shit that they're watching and see if that punch really landed, and just give them like 2-3 minutes to come up with a decision, so they can really watch without the crowd screaming on their ears. And you gotta remember, those guys are sitting like cage side. It sucks. It's not a good place to watch.
You can't tell what's landing.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, and mean, I was like, look,
like
if you
idea.
Put your butt in front of the guy and you punch the other guy, the fucking judge is not seeing anything because you're blocking his view. Oh, they
not
have a monitor. They're not looking at that.
And, I mean, you're right with the soundproof stuff. A lot of time they're influenced by the crowd, by the, that guy must be winning. That guy must be doing well.
Exactly.
I fought in Australia against Kyle Noak, and it was on the prelims, and it was since it was Australia, they had us fight on Saturday morning. So it would be on in the U.S. on Friday night.
Yeah,
so
we fought at like
10 a.m., man. And which actually worked well because a lot of time you spar and stuff in the mornings a lot of time for practice. But I still remember Kyle was like throwing something. Maybe it was like leg kicks or something. They weren't landing, or I was checking them, some of that effect. But I still remember Greg Jackson was like making a point to be really loud and say, "Oh, those kicks are hurting him. Those kicks are landing." And wow. And then like I didn't register until after the fight. I was like, "He's swaying the judges."
Yes.
Because there's no other sound in the auditorium. The judges only hear what he's saying. Holy that the judges might know, "Hey, this is Greg Jackson. He knows what the fuck he's talking about."
Yeah, that's a great point. That's bullshit, though.
I thought it was
I love clever. Greg Jackson, but this is fucking – but that's a great, like, right? Like, hey, you're going for your guy. Now.
Yeah, when I coach my guys, I say the same shit. Even if I know it's not landing,
yeah.
I'll kind of like see where the judges are. Go, "Oh yeah, that hurt him. I landed."
And the other guy was like, "This guy knows nothing. What the fuck is why? Are you watching the same fight? It's crazy."
Yeah. Look,
can you imagine you fighting Paulo in Rio, right? Like,
oh my god,
Paulo will hit you with a jab. The whole thing goes. I said, "Oh my god, did he knock him down?" I was like, "No, no." It's like, "Oh, but then he really hurt him." Because I could hear the crowd. That makes total difference. I'm 100%. And the visual too, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
Like if you get really cut, or like Johanna against the little Chinese girl.
Oh, Zaylee Wang.
She had that freaking head coming out of her head.
Yeah.
Look, that fight, Michelle actually said, "Look, I thought Johanna won." I didn't, but she did.
And, right, she's right.
Like, and in that case, the judges there are looking at Zhang and looking at Johanna. So she fucked her up. So she won the fight. And exactly. That happens too.
Oh, all the time, man. I mean, cuts, bruises, limps. You know, like even somebody like Barbosa, more often than not, he's going to be limping after the fight just because he threw so many low kicks.
Yes.
So it's not because you hurt his leg. He hurt his own leg kicking you.
Exactly. Hey, that's tough. Hey, how was this UFC time? We talked a little bit about earlier. That said, do you miss fighting? You still think you're gonna get to it?
I don't know. I don't know if I'm gonna get to it or not. Even though I do miss it, I think one of the things I miss the most is this kind of like took me a little while longer to realize is. I miss the competition. I miss the lifestyle. I really just miss I miss the lifestyle. Just train every day with your best buds, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then it's the traveling with your best buddies, like going across the world, or you're even a road trip to Louisiana, like a really small town in Louisiana, just to fight. But it's just kind of that camaraderie with your best friends.
That gotta
going
be
out
awesome.
Doing something. And there's not a lot of jobs in the modern day workplace that have that, you know, it's really only competitive sports, you know, and it's almost, I almost take it like a step further is, there was this guy on Rogan a few years ago, Sebastian Younger or Junger. I don't know how to say his last name, but he wrote that book Tribe. And his whole thing was, he was like a journalist, like a war journalist, right? Mm. So he would go to these really remote parts in Afghanistan or Iraq or whatever, and hang out with these troops. And all these guys, they're in the shittiest situation out there. They're living in, you know, these terrible little bases. They're, you know, eating MREs every day. They're getting shot at, whatever. Just terrible. They get back to the United States. They get back home. And they're insanely depressed because they are around all their buddies every day.
Yeah.
And it's kind of, granted, that's war. And I'm talking about fighting. But the two are...
The situation, kind of like the bond, right? It's kind of
the
similar.
Bond. Yeah, exactly. That camaraderie, that brotherhood. I really miss all that part of it.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
And I don't miss free international vacations anymore. You know, I got to go. I did Australia. I did Brazil. I did Manchester. I did Abu Dhabi. So. I do kind of miss getting those free plane tickets.
Yeah, and you get to stay there for the week. You go check it out. Yeah, that's
well,
pretty
cool. Brazil, I fought in Sao Paulo against Hani Marks.
Yeah.
Which is funny now because he's a heavyweight in Bellator about to fight Josh Barnett. Wow. And I'm like, we fought at 185. What's going on? But we fought Sao Paulo. And then after the fight, we went to Rio for like a week and just had an incredible time.
Yeah, I don't remember. I was clicking here on Ronnie Marquez. I don't remember him. Huh. That was like 2013.
Yeah, he had some good fights. He ended up losing to, I think, a couple of tough, Thiago Santos and maybe Yoel.
Yeah, that's what I'm looking here. UFC. Yeah, his last fight was, he won against you. Then, holy shit, he fought Paulo Filho. You know who that is?
Wow, whatever happened to him?
He's the same Paulo Filho? Yeah, Pride Paulo Filho.
Wow.
He fought that guy. Wow, it was Paulo Filho's, he actually won too. It's a Paulo Filho International Fighter Championship in Northeast Brazil. So it's probably like a tiny, it's small event or something. Yeah,
man, wow. Remember Paulo, he had that arm bar against Chael Sonnen where Chael, remember for a while Chael would like tap and then say that he didn't tap?
This is back in the WEC. Yeah, exactly. It was right here, WEC 31. Yeah,
I remember he fought him, then he tapped that one fight, then they had a rematch, and Paulo Filho, who just like out of it, he just wasn't even in the fight, and Chael was able to beat him pretty easily then.
Yeah, Paulo he's really out of it right now. He's having a hard time with CTE. I've been talking a lot with Rose Gracie, and she's running this CTE studies and she's not running it, but she's like supporting it and connecting fighters with the companies that. So she's like some sort of an ambassador. She's probably gonna curse me because I'm not saying what she's doing right, but she's really involved in that. Let's put it this way.
Yeah, yeah.
So she talks a lot with Paulo and they have. I had Babalu, Renato Sobral on a podcast, and we talked about that too. Babalu, he was telling me how, like, he was helping Verdun with some sparring sections, and one day, just like light sparring and stuff like that, and then he said that one day he sleep, and so he was getting up, and people were like, you okay? He's like, yeah, I just sleep. He's like, no, dude, you just blacked out, like, out of a tiny little punch, you just fucking, and then he said, wow, that's it, I'm not sparring anymore. And then he cannot see from one eye. Those guys went to freaking wars, though. You got to think, like, the fight that these guys had on those days, like, you cannot even compare with Jones. Jones doesn't get hit as, like, 10% of those guys did. Like, Mauricio Shogun Ruas, Wanderlei Silva. Those guys went to wars. Like,
I think, you know, that's the thing that a lot of people don't see is – They like you would look at his fights, like, okay, he had a couple of knockout losses to Chuck Liddell, but for the most part, he had a really good career, right? And those couple of knockout losses are not going to be the thing that sets him off mentally.
Oh, no. Or that gets,
but it's all those sparring sessions. Yeah. And again, let's look, he's sparring Verdum, you know, former UFC and Strikeforce heavyweight champion.
Well, I think that happened like at Cain Velasquez camp. So. He's sparring the guy who's getting ready for a title shot. So they're close friends too. So they're not even
whenever
going that
you're
hard.
That guy that comes in to spar the guy that's getting ready for the fight, it just means you're gonna get hit more.
Yeah, yeah.
You're not in there to beat him. You're not in there to win.
Do you follow Paulo Costa on Instagram? Do you see his posts training?
Uh-uh.
So they have its own gym, like its own. The city where he lives in Brazil built this training center for him.
Oh, right? Cool!
It's awesome. It's like they kind of say, "Hey, here, go freaking so you don't go anywhere else."
Right,
He helps the city. He talks a lot. They do like charity events all out of the gym, and it's awesome. But he brings guys, and they do like I don't know like 20 round sessions, and he brings like fresh guys every round, and he's beating up everybody. It's those guys, I know a couple of guys that go there to train and they say it's fucking brutal. It's brutal because he goes He asks us to go hard. We don't, because like we go hard, but not 100%, because you don't want to fucking take a chance in hurting the guy. But no. he's punching us like there's no tomorrow. Like,
and as soon as you go 100%, he's going to go 101.
Yes, exactly, right? Exactly.
How because that's the age-old rule in sparring, you know. Unless you get like, you know, none of us are getting ready for fights. So when you're getting ready for a fight, you just kind of got to go hard, right? Yeah. It's just what it is. But when you're not, the thing that, you know, I tell my guys and everybody else always says the same thing is only go as hard as you want me to go hard. Or only hit me as hard as you want to be hit, you know?
That makes a lot of sense.
Because that's what happens a lot. You get these like young guys who are just so gung-ho, and they just come after you, and you're like, well, we can't have a long-lasting sparring relationship this way. Once we're getting ready for fights, we'll go really hard. But when we're in the gym just moving around, if you try to take my head off, I'm for sure taking your head off.
Hmm. I saw Conor once. When Conor did that Ultimate Fighter, He had this whole thing about not sparring hard because you don't have to. He said, look, I kind of know. I mean, he says, like, what I need from the sparring sessions is timing. I do not get timing getting hit or hitting my guy. So we kind of, like, just, like, touching, you know, so you get the timing. But they say, what did he say? He's like, you can upgrade the software without hurting the hardware. Something like that. That was pretty smart.
He's always got good quotes like that,
right?
Man.
I thought he was genius because I was like, hey, he's kind of right too. Those shooty box days, it's over. Those guys, they used to have like real fights every day.
Yeah,
every day.
I don't know if it's over because I think that's kind of what Lovato does when he goes down there.
That's what he know? Flies there for there, right?
Yeah,
he says,
yeah.
Because it's the porrada time. That's exactly
Conor's right, but there's kind of two, you know, because Conor says that, but more than likely Conor has some sessions where he throws down and they spar hard.
Says that, you know, boxer guy that he knocked out Artem, his ass. What's his name?
Artem Loba?
No. The guy who fought Artem Loba on the bare knuckle. What's his?
Oh,
Pauly Malignaggi. Apparently they flew the guy and that was hilarious when Conor was getting ready for Floyd.
Hey, punked him.
He hit the guy, man. I'm sorry. Like, you can say whatever you want. He's like, they had me flying like 10 hours and no lunch and no water. And I get there, so I can put your gloves on. I was like, I don't think so. I'm sorry, dude. Like, hey.
I mean, yeah, I saw he looked soft at the time, you know, and it's almost like no shame. It's almost would have been, he would have been better off if he had just owned it and been like, yeah, I went to train with Conor and he fucked me up, that he's that good.
Exactly.
Instead of making excuses.
Exactly. Say, dude, it's like, I think the whole thing was just like a big promo setup. So
it was pretty brilliant.
It was, right? Just so like, hey, see how Conor is ready? What do you think happened on that fight? Because people are like, hey, he won a few rounds. But there are some other guys were like, yeah, but the Floyd was just like letting the fight go. Floyd did not turn on until late because he didn't want to.
I think it was just in round one where Conor kind of like slipped his punch and came back with his left uppercut.
Oh, he was. You know, I don't think it was round one. He was like, but he was like either like two or three.
Yeah,
it was a really good shot, right?
Yeah, it was a great shot, and I was almost like, oh, could that have put Floyd down? I mean, because that's really what Conor does in his MMA fights, you know? Yeah. He kind of pulls and throws that straight left.
Aldo.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, exactly. And when he fought Floyd and did that, I was like, holy shit. And I think the reason he got that punch off is because Floyd kind of had a moment where he was like, okay, I'm going to get aggressive with him. And then he got countered. Because, I mean, more often than not, the times that guys get clipped, especially counter fighters, I mean, I'm looking at myself, the times I've really been hit bad in a fight is when I've gotten too aggressive, is when I've left myself open trying to get them. And Floyd's made a whole career out of not doing that.
Yeah.
And so I think he did that early on. He was like, oh, shit, this guy's acting pretty good.
Yeah.
Let me do my usual. Let me ride this out for 12 rounds. If we get a stoppage, I get a stoppage. But I know I'm gonna start piecing them up. And if you train with a boxing coach, they kind of have that mentality, you know, whereas MMA is much more of a sprint. I've had this boxing coach, and his advice is always in the fight, and it makes sense. I like it. Just touch him. Just touch him. just touch him. He's never like, go get him, go get him. It's always like, just touch, just touch. And I think that boxing mentality over a 12-round fight is much more intelligent than is getting after it and, you know, putting it all out there in, you know, the first six rounds. You have so much time.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. You guys had a couple of EBIs there, right? Like, that's still – I mean, not now. Yeah. And I don't want to do the COVID bulletin either because it's such a – it's enough talking about COVID, right?
But
But you guys are planning on doing that. I remember Gordon Ryan went there.
We were doing our own. We were calling the ANA Invitational. We did that for about 3 years. Well, I think we did 10 of them total. And they were pretty cool shows. You know, we had – we actually had a lot of crazy matches that you're not going to see anywhere else. We had Adam Piccolotti, who's a Bellator fighter. You know, he trains with Khabib a little bit versus Danny Castillo. We had Dave Rickles come in and fight somebody. It was Dave Rickles versus Jamie Varner. Like, we had a bunch of.
I think you had like Diego Ferreira. Diego against. What's the guy from the UFC fighter, too?
Which one would you say?
Diego
Almeida?
Ferreira.
Oh, yeah, we had CDF. CDF fought Mike Chiesa.
Mike Chiesa, yes, and he caught him too, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a crazy fight.
Crazy fight.
In your gym and on it.
Yeah, and, that's like as high level as it gets too, right? Like, Diego, it's awesome.
You got Mike Chiesa running up the ladder at 170 right now, getting a one-arm Kimura on Carlos Condit. You got CDF beating the brakes off a lot of dudes.
Yeah,
and we had them come down to Onnit and do a grappling match for next to nothing. Yeah, pretty cool.
That is pretty cool.
I mean, even one of our very first shows, we had Gordon Ryan come down.
I remember this was
before Gordon was who he was. He was still a brown belt at the time. And I think he was still weighing around 180 pounds. But he went from that year, I think that was 2016 or 2017, we had him come down, I think – I think he paid for his own flight.
Really?
He stayed on Curtis's. Curtis was the jiu-jitsu coach. He stayed on Curtis's couch, and I think we paid him $200.
Wow!
And then the next year, he becomes like the highest earning submission grappler on the planet.
Yeah.
And makes, you know, $200K or something. Crazy.
It's crazy, right? It's crazy, man. It's crazy.
Yeah. Gordon,
he's in a such a. I have this funny story because I used to go to Hansel's like twice a week. I would do a class and I would do a few privates. And I think Tuesday he has that legendary class, 7 o'clock in the morning. The one that George St. Pierre flies from Canada to train here with the guys.
Oh, wow.
I think it's Tuesday, 7 o'clock. And I will just sit there. There's this little bench at the mat, right? So I'll just sit there with my feet on the mat by myself on the corner. And Gordon was like, he's rolling like right in front of me. So I'm fucking watching. There's no one best for you to watch. You're watching literally the best guy that's doing it right now.
Yeah.
So I'm there. I'm watching. And that bothered him because I could see it. He as he was doing, he would kind of look at me. I'm a big guy too, right? So he's like, "So who the fuck is this guy? Why is he staring at me like that?" Because he's kind of like a weird guy too. He's none of this warrior that he's on Instagram. He's a very quiet and composed guy. He doesn't talk loud. He's very shy. So it's like I'm just watching, right? It's like, and as he's rolling, he's kind of like watching me from his corner, from the corner of his eyes, and then one day I told João, I said, I think this guy's gonna fucking punch me one day because I can tell by his demeanor, like his body, is like I can tell it bothers him. So I kind of like stopped watching him for a while. So then one day I'm sitting there watching the rows. I think João was sparring or something, and he sits right next to me, and he shakes my hand and says, "Hey, dude," like, and then I was like, "Hey, do you do like privates?" He's like, "Yeah." Say, "Yeah, let's do one. Hey, man, anytime you want." We exchange numbers, and I was wrong the whole time.
Right.
But maybe because he was like, you know, this guy's coming here, and I was always rocking like an Onnit T-shirt. So he's like,
"Oh, yeah,
who's this guy? Why is he watching me like that?" It's super
man.
Weird.
It's just. the misconceptions you can have with people when there's no verbal communication.
Yeah.
It's almost just like texting. You know, you don't know the context of the text.
Yeah.
And we are just eyeballing each other. He doesn't know you're this big Brazilian dude. He might be calling him out for his next super fight.
Yeah, that's what it's like. He's like spying my techniques or something. Yeah. Right.
And
I never thought of it that way.
And sometimes when you like look at somebody while you're rolling, it's not easy to be like, oh hey, you know, you're like kind of in battle, but you're kind of like observing the room at the same time.
Yeah.
And that's so common to happen, because it's happened to me before where you see like a guy sparring and you're like, who the fuck is that guy, you know? and then 10 minutes later, you're like, oh, hey.
Yeah. One day, that day that Khabib was doing his thing upstairs, it was the week of the Conor's fight. So he was like training at Renzo's. So he was just warming up. I think you had what's his fucking name? I'm so bad with name. Randy Brown, maybe, like sparring on the, because on the second floor. You ever been in Renzo's?
Yeah.
So on the second floor, so you get in. There's a mat. It's the Muay Thai guys. Then you go down, the blue basement, right? So right. If instead of go down, you go up one floor. They have like one big mat. They have like a boxing ring and a cage.
Oh wow! So they got three stories.
Yes, three stories.
Oh wow.
So Khabib was on the mat upstairs, just warming up. I was there too, doing my class. So these guys came. I did not realize it was Khabib until 5 minutes after they was stretching and stuff. So then I was there already because they closed the place. Like it's the fight week, right? So yeah. they closed the upstairs. I was there already with the Hobbs and Renzo's brother. So I kind of get a pass. And and then we get to sit and watch the warm-up. And I think that was this guy, I think it was either David Branch or Randy Brown sparring on a boxing ring. And I went there, like, and after my training, I started watching those guys sparring and stuff. And then a hand touched me and comes, like, right next to me, and I look, it's Khabib. Then I was like, dude, hey, man, how's it going? And he's not friendly at all, not at all. He's a very reserved guy. There was a couple guys with a camera, and this guy kind of standing in front of him with the camera. He's like, why are you blocking me, dude? And the guy's like, oh, sorry, I just want a picture. And he goes like, take the picture. He's like, not with the guy. He's just like, okay, take the picture. So you just stand there for the guy, and the guy took the picture and left. So
I think I've met him once. We were on the card in Brazil together, and He was super friendly, but he didn't say anything because, you know, I don't think his English was as good as it was as it is now. But I remember he just like smiled and shook hands. But I watch his videos with Cormier, and I feel like he's like a very just dry, sarcastic type of guy.
Yeah, with his friends, right? But he's like he's very reserved. He's a very he's a very like he's not shy. He only jokes and talks to his friends and stuff.
Right, okay.
Do you see some of those videos that he's sparring with Daniel Cormier? He takes fucking Cormier down, and it's crazy, dude. It's crazy,
dude.
That's kind of what I thought. His father just passed away like a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, so sad.
I don't know if you fight back. I just don't. He had this connection with his father, right? With he was his coach and everything.
Well, a lot of guys will keep going to keep getting that paycheck, and I don't think he really cares about that.
No, he got a lot of money.
I think he's already a superstar in Dagestan. I think he's got plenty of money. If you look at his IG, actually, he's got, like, I think him and Connor probably have the most out of any other fighter. I think he's, you know, 20-some-odd million.
Let's take a look at that. Yeah, that's probably, you're probably right. I think Connor still beats him, but let me see. Let's take a look. Oh, shit.
Are you still going to train at Renzo's at all?
I did last week, but it's closed. The gym's still closed. I had a nice selfie with with Craig Jones.
We
hooked up. I was like, hey, let's do a podcast and stuff, and he was all in for it until he's like, hey, let's just wait until Sunday because I got a fight coming up, and you see what happened? He lost that fight.
Yeah, because of the bad ref call, right?
Yeah, terrible, a terrible, terrible ref call.
That was bad. That guy that he was going against is really good. That Mason, what's his name? Mason Fowler or something?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, the guy's solid. Oh, yeah.
Oh, look at my hash guard.
Oh, yeah. My man.
So we were like, hey, let's do a podcast. Yeah. Hey, do you mind if we do it after Sunday? I was like, no, not at all. Hey, awesome, man. And I texted him on Monday and said, hey, dude, I don't even think – he's probably just pissed. He didn't lose, right? So it's like right. it's a different feeling than like you go there, you get choked out or something like that.
Definitely.
So I was like, hey, dude, that sucked. Hey, let's still do that fucking podcast. We can talk about it, you know? I never got a reply. I will.
Yeah, not only is he pissed because of, losing, but the money thing, man.
Yeah.
Not only are you losing out on the money, not because you lost a real way, but because of the ref's fuck up. Now you're losing out maybe, what, 10K? Like, what's SUG play, like 10K or whatever it is? I mean, that's a lot of money.
If you win, right, like you got like 10K, probably.
Yeah, him, yeah.
For him, it's probably maybe something else on the side there because –
Right.
He's the champion in the main event and stuff like
that. Yeah, he's a big draw. He was actually in Austin a few months ago, and I got to get a little rolling with him, and I could tell he was being polite.
Really?
Yeah. I feel like he could have had me, like, you know, in a million different submissions, but instead he just kind of played around with me and made it fun, which is cool. I appreciate it, you know?
Is that much of a difference in levels and stuff?
Yeah, he was, like, really, like, loose and, like, he didn't play a super tight game. But he passed a few times. But I feel like if he wanted to turn it on, he could have, for sure.
Okay, those guys is crazy. Like, I did that one private with Gordon. I don't remember shit about it because he did this super. He's like, so what you want a gi or no gi? I was like, well, it's you. Let's go no gi, right? He's like, oh, yeah. All right. So I'm going to teach you, like, a really cool, like, a leg lock thing. Like, oh, all right. And it was so fucking complicated. And he's a great instructor. He explains it so well. He got this whole thing from John Danaher, right? So he really goes to like explaining why and the balance and what happens to your body and why you're doing it. It's really, really good. It's just like I said, dude. I'm a white belt. Why you, you know? But I appreciate. Much. Hey, I got a picture at the end, and I say I rode with Gordon.
Maybe armbar from guard next time.
So maybe just like pass the guard, right? I did a private with Hickson last year in California, and that was amazing.
Yeah. Sure.
So
yeah.
It was the funniest thing because I want to find a picture to show you.
Who just moved to Austin and starting a jiu-jitsu school here is Shanji.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, nice. Look at this.
Oh, yeah. You had to do this one.
Oh, yeah. He kind of directed me too. And I'm going like this. It's like, no. Like this. It's like, oh, all right, the arms. Yeah. It's like, oh, okay. I'm blocking Helio Gracie. He's like, step to the side a little bit. Let's show them in. I was like, dude, I suck. I'm sorry. And he's laughing.
I'm so sorry.
It's cracking up.
That's funny. That's like Salo was down in Houston at my cousin's school. And taking a class with him was almost intimidating. You know, he's in the front of the class like this. And he's kind of got like his eyes are kind of squinty. And he's like... You just got this like this presence about him. It's super intimidating, you know? And then at the end, same thing while we're taking the pictures. It's like everybody's lined up just perfectly doing the same type of stuff.
They are big into that. It's crazy. Look, I had Bochecha on a podcast. I just recorded with Andre Galvão. I think it was over the weekend.
Dude, I feel like the low man on the totem pole compared to all the people you're talking about.
But it's crazy, dude. It's
got Hickson, Galvão.
You Andy, man. You're my brother, dude. This is awesome. Look, I'm having so much fun, dude. So Hickson, it was so funny because I got to California and I'm talking and I'm texting, right? I have no one. I don't have any Hickson's contact. So I'm talking through Instagram. And it's his wife replying. So I send a message. I say, I'm going to be in California in August. I would love to do a private with Hickson. Can you let me know how and if it's even possible? And they seen my message because we chatted before about, like, I bought a gi and stuff. And she's seeing my messages and nobody's replying.
Yeah, you can see when it's red.
Yeah, it's a sing. Yeah. And so I go to Renzo. I say, look, can you hook me up here? He's like, I never asked him for anything. And I don't want a free either. I'll pay. Can you just make the contact? And then he's like, hey, I'll take care of you. Just go. Like, relax. It's going to happen. I'll make it happen. It's like, all right. So I get there not knowing if it's ever going to happen. And then the second day I got a text message. Say, hey, Rafael, this is Hickson. I was like,
whoa.
Hey, and then I got a phone call. And that is the craziest moment of my jiu-jitsu life. I'm talking to the man, and he was like, all right, my brother. So what are you trying to accomplish? Because I don't. And then at this point, I was like, what the fuck Hansel's told him, right? Yeah. Saying, hey, oh, this guy, he trains here. He trains here. He probably thinking like Gordon Ryan, Craig Jones. And he's like, what the fuck is this guy trying to do with me, right?
Because
And why? So, what are you trying to accomplish? Are you training for a competition? I say, no. I say, master, I'm a blue belt. I just want to learn the basics from you. Like the basics, whatever you think the basic is, that's what I want to learn. He said, oh, all right. So, yeah. I'll be very happy to show you the invisible jiu-jitsu. It's like, yeah, that's what I want to see. It's awesome.
That's killer.
And we had the crazy, like, the breathing class technique
for
40, 45 minutes, just teaching me how to breathe and how important it is to breathe. So if you don't control your cardio, it doesn't mean how well you fight. It doesn't mean anything. It was a crazy 3 hours almost I was there with him.
Do you still do any of those breathing exercises?
No, I don't. I suck at it. It's complicated. It's not easy. I have this whole look. He made me take notes. So he was like, "So you get that?" I was like, "Yeah, I got it." He's like, "All right, so write it down." He's like, "Okay, I'll go write it down." Look, I have this whole like by bullet points and everything. Yeah, everything. So look, control the cardio. Oh no, shit! This is the.
That's your grocery list.
Yeah, no, that was the podcast like bullet points.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
I didn't know because it was in Portuguese.
Yeah, this is it. Look, it says breathing, air come in naturally, and comes out like when you push. So he goes like you. And you really push it out, and he was
out
doing
out your stomach.
Yes, yeah. And then we go like we're talking about the base, how you do a square from the base. We did this whole like jiu-jitsu entry level thing, but from him, he was awesome.
That's very cool.
He was awesome.
I mean, and the breathing thing, you know, like in the modern day, you know, like with modern day health and stuff, everybody's looking at so many other aspects of health, right?
Yeah.
It, like for the longest time, it was just nutrition and exercise.
Yeah.
But now it's like the different types of nutrition, the different supplementations, even the taking of psychedelics to get your mind right or to cure PTSD or cure addiction. And there's all the new types of supplements. And there's not just working out, but there's the yoga, the stretching, but breath work has become this huge thing everywhere. So even like the yoga studios in Austin, they'll focus on breath work at the end. We've got a couple people that are on it that are super into the breath work, you know, because this whole Wim Hof has had this whole resurgence in popularity with this younger generation who's trying to, you know, find a little bit more to, you know, a little bit more beyond the typical exercise or the typical whatever it is. And the breath thing is huge now. I've done a little bit of it and I really enjoy it.
He was telling me on the podcast we did that how he would bring his heartbeat down right before the fight, right? Mm-hmm. So he says, I'm in the ring now, and my heartbeat is like, I don't know, like 50 heartbeats per minute or whatever. Whatever, it's low. Whatever low.
Sure.
And so the guy, his heartbeat, it's like a 80. Right? So we start the fight. Now my heartbeat, it's like a 60. And his heartbeat is like 100. So a minute goes by, my heartbeat is like 70, and his heartbeat is like 120. So he's already, and I'm still there just waiting. And it's yeah. genius, because you got to think, this was like 30-something years ago, dude. It's like,
no, absolutely. Right? That's brilliant. I remember one of my fights against, he became a friend and training partner after the fight, and he ended up making the UFC as well. But I remember I was in the cage, and I was like, I'm kind of doing the same thing. I'm trying to stay calm, but stay loose. And I remember looking across the cage, and this guy was like jumping up and down, like pacing back and forth, like super, like, you know, and I'm like, wow, dude, he's definitely going to get tired at some point.
No shit, really quick, right?
And he did. I mean, he was a way better wrestler than me. So like the first two or three rounds, he was just throwing me around. I was getting back up. And then the fourth round, he could barely lift his hands up. He was so tired.
You see the Brazilian guy, the guy who does the flips and the weird kicks and
everything? Michael Pereira?
Yes, he did just that. You see him before the fight, he's doing flips and he's dancing. He has this full choreography for the song he's coming in, and he's really jamming, and he gets into the octagon. He runs like three times around the whole thing, like climbing on the fence and flipping and stuff. He's already tired by the time the fight started. He's like, all right, what the fuck do I do now? It's like, yeah, now you go fight, stupid.
Well, then he had a good fight. I think he had a pretty fast finish against, maybe that was against Randy Brown. It might have been against him. But then he fought a guy that wasn't nearly as good as a guy like Randy Brown and had a much harder time.
Yes,
he
put him away right away. That's exactly it. Look, he did Wan Jung Choi. That's not even UFC. UFC, he did a one fight against Danny Roberts.
And he
was a beautiful flying knee and punch kind of thing.
Yeah.
And he's doing all this crazy stuff. Brazil is going nuts. It's like, oh, bring him the title. He's the next champion.
Right.
Then he fought Tristan Connolly, and he lost because he was like super tired. And he missed weight
Tristan
by
Connolly
like...
just want to go away.
And he missed weight by like 20 freaking pounds too. He was a mess. And then his next fight was Diego Sanchez, when Diego just say, fuck it, I'm out. Remember that?
Oh, Diego,
he was like, asked the referee, so if I say I cannot continue, do I win? He's like, yeah, you win. It's like, yeah, I cannot continue.
I'm out,
like, that was such a cheap shot.
I know, man. It really is, but it's so smart. Like, why would you not, you know?
I get it.
There's two sides to it, because there's that warrior inside all of us, the warrior fighter who's like, oh, at all costs, I will keep going. I will survive. I'll fight through anything.
But
there's also the guy like Diego Sanchez who's been doing that shit for way too long. And he's finally like, you know what? Let's just call this shit now. Let me get paid.
Exactly. That's like, I don't know, like 40, 50. He's probably not making a ton of money anymore, but it got to be like 50 show, 50 to win or something
like that.
He's got to
be, His show and win have to be in the 100,000s.
Something like that. Let's take a look. Hold on.
I would hope so, because, you know, for a guy that's like on his eighth UFC contract, you would hope he's getting paid.
I don't think so. That's kind of why they – look, UFC Fight Night 167, right? Was that one? Let's see.
You need your own young Jamie.
20 grand.
To look everything up for you.
It says 20 grand. 20 grand. Holy, when was this? UFC Fight Night, February 11th. It was just now. Yeah, it was just now. It was 20,000. Promotional bonus.
Oh, that's the Reebok money.
Yes, right? Yes. Hold on. Yeah, no, they don't say anything. Performance of the night, not for him, of course. Promotional bonus, 20 grand. It doesn't... Yeah, I need a young Jamie, right? I need to make money on this, because there's no money, man. We're just doing... So there's this guy starting this BJJ Flicks in Brazil.
Uh-huh.
It's gonna be like a Netflix, but he got a button. It's just for jiu-jitsu, right? So he's gonna do like this big platform. He got all the big names in there, and say, hey, you're gonna do a subscription. It's gonna be just like Netflix. You're gonna get there. That's the screen. You select the shows. There's documentaries. There's live that's shows. Cool. It's supposed to be really cool. So we're gonna be in there. He's like, oh, I want to bring your show and stuff.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So he got already all the jiu-jitsu guys from that I already did to upload there. And I'm trying to find. I won't find it. But look, this guy's not making a killing. That was the part I was trying to think.
Yeah, so yeah.
I'm guessing like $50,000 to show, $50,000 to win. He say, you know what? It's an extra $50,000. Fuck my integrity or whatever.
Right,
you want to call
right,
it, right,
right.
It's like I win. Yay!
Exactly.
Plus, it's not a loss on his record either, because at this point, it makes the difference between staying or not on the UFC, right?
Yeah, or a lot of time for your next fight, if you're coming off of a win, it's going to be slightly more. But it'd be a small increment.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
So let's end on, I want to talk to you about Costa versus Adesanya.
Holy shit.
Because I know you probably have very strong feelings on that.
Very strong feelings. I just recorded. So we're doing our show 100 this Friday. So
how long have you been doing this?
I don't know. Like, I did it. I started this with Costa, like in 2017.
Okay.
So then we stopped right after when he started his camp with Romero. We stopped. He has crazy hours. He trains like 4 o'clock in the morning, and then he comes back at 5:30 home. He calls me, "Yay, let's record." I was like, "Dude, I literally got work to do, like at 9.
I'm driving my kids to school.
I can, yeah. So we kind of like took a break, and he was always like, "Hey, you got to keep doing the podcast." And I was like, by myself, it's weird. I'm not freaking Chael Sonnen. Like that guy, you got to be a special kind of crazy to talk an hour and a half by yourself.
And, you got a special kind of crazy, a special kind of narcissist, or I don't know what it is.
And
but
be entertaining too, because it's not, I can talk for an hour, but people will be so bored that not fun. So then we had this idea. I do with every Monday, I do a show with Kio and Gracie. And there's this guy from this news agency from Brazil that feeds ESPN and all the big markets in Brazil. He comes in and do the news, then we talked about, you know, like a kind of a Brandon Shaw base.
Okay.
You know,
yeah.
So I'm talking, we're shooting the shit, me and Kio, and then this guy comes and he reads the news and we talk about the news and we do like the review of the cards and the preview and all that kind of stuff. And that show, it's all, people love that because there's nothing like that in Brazil. Nothing.
Yeah, I like that because I do like Brendan's Below the Belt.
Yes.
You know, that's him, but he's also got
the producer.
What's his name? Chin.
Yes.
Yeah. Chin kind of feeds him stuff, and it's mostly Brendan talking, but Chin still chimes in.
Yeah, exactly. That's all I need.
That's format.
And that's kind of what I do with Q. And Q is more type of his son of Marcelo Baring. I don't know if that rings a bell. He was one of the Hickson's first black belts. He was like a legendary jiu-jitsu fighter in Brazil who passed away like many, many years ago.
Okay.
So I do that thing with Kiwan, and then the guy from the news come and he says, "So, Aldo said that," and then we'll talk about it, and it gets a really nice dynamic. And then a couple more days, I do like we're doing, which is more like, then I try to copy like Joe Rogan style where we just talk and I don't do like interviews, and hey it's been working. So the thing was, we were talking the 100th episode on Friday, right? And we're gonna do this bunch of guests. We might have like Amanda Nunes and who else? I already did the Victor Belfort, and I just recorded with Paulo for their 100th show because I was like, Paulo has to be honest. We started this together.
Yeah.
So you were there on the first one. So you're going to be there on the 100th one. And we were just talking about that. Say, look, this fucking guy doesn't want to fight me. And he's not even mad. He's just thinking, like, I don't know what else the fuck. I'm ready. I don't know what else to do. Because they offer him July 11th, just now, like last Saturday. He was supposed to be fighting at the Zena last Saturday. They offer him that date. Paulo said yes. No contract. It's just like, hey, are you up to? He's like, fuck yeah, I'm up to. and they never got a response from a designer. And then they try again in August, and they never got a reply again. So then that whole tough started, right? Like the they were going to do like an Ultimate Fighter with him and a designer as coaches.
Oh, right.
You say the coaches, the designer folks said no.
What?
So they don't know what's going on. They don't know what's going on. The guy, we were just thinking like maybe this guy's hurt, and he doesn't want to, you know, he doesn't want to take a chance.
Deal the injury.
He doesn't want to take a chance for the UFC say, you know what, we're just gonna do an interim belt because he can't fight. So he's kind of like playing dumb and not replying and not acknowledging. Then his coach comes and say, yeah, we really don't know who we're fighting yet. It's not your freaking call. It's like, right? It's like, it's crazy.
I don't like them already talking about super fights and stuff. You know, like, the super fights should be reserved for those people who already cleaned out, you know? Yeah. There's not a number one contender ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
But clearly that's not the case here.
No, not at all.
And everybody wants to see that fight, man. They've been talking shit for like over a year now. They're both, you know, the two best guys of that weight class. Everybody wants to see it.
Yeah. What do you think is going to happen in the fight?
I have no idea. I don't know how to call that one. You know, because like Yoel landed a couple good shots on Izzy.
Yeah.
But for the most part, that fight was boring as shit.
That fight was – I cannot believe Yoel did that. I was so excited for the fight. I was like,
yeah,
Yoel is going to fucking kill Adesanya. He's going to come out like a bull, and he's going to drag his ass down, and he's never coming back up.
And that's what bothers me so much. And again, you know, it's much easier from your couch at home.
Yeah.
But when you're looking at Yoel and you know how good he is at taking dudes down – and he only went for like maybe one or two takedowns on Izzy. And even though he completed the takedown, he didn't put any effort into staying on top.
Yeah.
And controlling him, which he's done with so many guys like Derek Brunson or, you know, name him. Yeah. He's done it to a lot of guys.
Yeah. I think what bothered me the most, it was like, when is going to be the next chance you got to go for the belt?
Never. Exactly.
It's just not happening. This is it.
You go. 30.
You go like all in, even if that means getting knocked the fuck out. That's it. But at least you freaking try.
Yeah,
right? That was probably the worst. Paulo was laughing. He's like, that was the worst title fight ever.
And, and terrible.
Paulo did not fight that fight because of like 3 weeks. Because our designer says like, oh, I don't want to wait. I just want to keep active. I say, dude, it's 3 weeks.
He was gonna be ready for the bicep.
He was gonna be ready in 3 weeks. That was the whole thing. He was gonna be ready. And camp and everything, that fight could happen 3 weeks after the Adesanya fight, after the Yoel Romero fight.
But Adesanya felt more comfortable with Romero, huh?
Yeah, I guess so. And you can tell now he's really, really – well, before, kind of like Paulo was kind of like just shooting the shit, saying, oh, he's avoiding me. He doesn't want to fight me. Because that's part of like they just announced the other fight.
Yeah.
But now it's kind of real. It's kind of, he does not want to fight Paulo. He does not want to fight Paulo. Just like that, the girl who kind of dropped the belt and said, oh, fuck it, I'm not fighting Cyborg.
Remember, like the Ronda Mae.
Yes. Dude, you're so good with names. Like, I don't remember anyone's name. And it's just like, no, I'm not fighting her. Here's a belt. I'm all set, dude. Just, hey.
At least she said it and gave it up, though.
Yeah, right? That was crazy.
Yeah.
Man, this was so cool. I loved it. It was awesome. We just needed like a couple of beers and stuff. We'll be fine.
I know, man. We can just write.
All right, dude. Hey, I appreciate how people get in touch. Like, say anything about On It or you, social media. That you're teaching classes at the On It martial arts thing too, right?
Yeah, I'm teaching a lot of mixed martial arts, kickboxing, boxing, Muay Thai, Jiu-Jitsu. All that stuff. If you're in Austin and you want to come learn how to fight, if you want to actually fight, or if you just want to do it for fun, come see me.
Yeah.
Other than that, man, my social media is pretty weak. I'm mostly just putting up, you know, random. I'll put up something from this.
Okay. That'll
go on my social media.
Yeah. Awesome. Awesome. I'll make sure I'll send you some stuff soon.
Yeah. Send me like a pic or something, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
But man, I really appreciate you getting me on here. This is a blast. I can talk this shit all day, as you can tell. So
this was awesome, and it's believe it or not, it's hard to find a like a good like talking about it like that. Like we've been talking about fucking fights and shit for like an hour and a half. And this was awesome, dude. I loved it. It was really cool. I appreciate you coming over, and I appreciate the time too.
Very good to see you again.
Hey, let's get together soon, man. If you're here in New York, hit me up.
I still need to make that trip to New York.
We've been talking about for years now, right? Like 2 years. So, all right, man. We'll see. I'll probably get to you before you make this trip to New York.
No doubt. Hit me up when you're coming here first.
I'll definitely do it, man. I'll definitely do it. Andrew Craig, my buddy. I appreciate it, man.
Good to see you, man.
Thanks, brother.
Bye-bye.